Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everyone. Happy Monday. Welcome to the show on this 23rd of December. And Merry Christmas, or whatever tradition you follow. I happen to be in an odd circumstance at the moment. I'm in Henderson, Nevada, sitting in a parking lot of a hospital and enjoying my early Christmas present. And that Christmas present is that my brother had a heart attack last Monday, and according to the docs, very nearly didn't make it. By the grace of God, I think, circumstances were that he had what they call a cardiac muscle event prior to that, and then a heart attack in the ER. And I suppose if you're going to have a heart attack, that's the place to do it. So really happy today to have my guest Jenny Berg, who's the director of the McMinnville Public Library. And Jenny is a friend and helped encourage me with my book, which, by the way, is called There's a Somebody. And if you'd like to know more about that or about me, go to my website, stephenwlong.com. The Facebook page is There's a Somebody, and you can contact me through either of those portals. So without further ado, good morning, Jenny.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Just to clarify,
on.
I'm guessing that the early Christmas present is the fact that your brother's doing well.
I set you up for that. Yes, that's right. Actually, I forgot to say it, but I just left his room. And, you know, he's just, as we all, I suppose, love our siblings, just the sweetest fella, and we very nearly lost him. So this is a great Christmas present.
I'm glad for you that you'll get to spend the Christmas with him.
You bet. Thank you. So here's my challenge to you. You're the library director, and I'm going to pose this scenario that we really don't need libraries anymore. We have electronic media, and is that, in your experience, is that supplanting physical books?
Most certainly we still need libraries. Even if e-books do eventually supplant print books, which I will get into later in terms of that doesn't seem to be happening at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
But even with e-books, there still is the fact that they can be borrowed. And one hopes that they would continue to be borrowed. So libraries have, for some, great amount of time, kept changing with the changing media. So
mm-hmm.
the idea that, okay, there's print books, well, and now there's audiobooks, that didn't put libraries out of business. We just started circulating audiobooks as well. And
right.
now the same is true with e-books in terms of, there are people that can't afford or do not want to purchase as many e-books as they might be able to read, and lucky for them, they can still borrow them from the library, which is
sure.
interesting to think about because some of the research that I've done indicates that even when somebody supposedly purchases an e-book, they don't really own it. It's on their device, and it would seem that they'd own it,
mm-hmm.
but they are restricted in what they can do with it, who they can loan it to. And I recently read something about somebody who had purchased, or what they thought they'd done was purchase a movie, and
mm-hmm.
then the maker of that movie decided that they would no longer be able to use that on their electronic device. So that's
wow.
one of the, and I don't know enough about that to really get into it, but I do know that there is certainly talk in the industry about the fact that beware of what you think you're purchasing, you might actually be just long-term borrowing it. So,
sure.
But what actually made me think about wanting to talk about the idea of e-books, I came across a study from VoxBurner, and they do research on the new generation. And their recent study was about books as physical objects versus e-books, and they found mm-hmm. that 62% of 16 to 24-year-olds still prefer the physical book. And so one of the things that, you know, I think a lot of people think that, oh, okay, well, the new generation is going to be the group that brings in the e-books. They'll have their device, and that's the only mm-hmm. thing that they'll be wanting to use. And it turns out that they're still interested in print books, in physical books.
Jenny, exactly. And I think old folks like me are probably the default assumption is, just like you said, that the you know, kids would or young people would gravitate toward the electronic whatever, and that would be just all they know and all they would do. And yet I heard somebody the other day, and this was a very young girl, 10, I think, and the discussion may have been about Santa Claus or something, and mm-hmm. got around to the fact that she likes to read so much, and somebody assumed that she would then want an e-reader. And she said, no, I like to hold a book. And that's certainly my experience. I've had people tell me they like the smell of the paper, the smell of the ink, the feel of the book. And there's something about that experience that, and it's not that one is better than the other. I think there's really, really a place for the electronic media. But there's something about an old physical book or an old style book that is just appealing apparently to a lot of people.
Yes, yes. And we still see, you know, we serve children and parents to a great extent. And the children are coming in and getting the books where, you know, they can hold them, they can turn the pages.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that although they later get into electronic media, their first introduction into books is still with the physical book. One of the things that came across in this study that I had read was the idea that your bookshelf is still a form of self-expression and a little bit of a status symbol in terms of, you know, you can't show off what you've read or your education level or your interests so much on your e-reader, whereas you can on your physical bookshelf. And that's
sure.
something that young people are still interested in.
I'd never thought of that. And yet, I'd heard the same thing in terms of albums,
yes.
Record albums versus the CD, that the record album artwork is a thing unto itself.
Yes, so they're definitely... Definitely, although, and now, of course, there is not even you don't even have the CDs. It is all electronic. I think maybe a little bit the difference with music is that, let's say you have your friends over, you can be playing that music, and so they would get a sense of your self-expression in that way, whereas you can't exactly play your e-books to show
sure.
them, you know, to show off. But I certainly agree with you about the album art cover or artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's nothing that I've found yet that can replace that fold-out and various art, particularly from the classic rock groups that I remember taking a
sure.
look at.
Sure. Wait, you remember taking a look at?
Well, just I'm thinking about the
me.
Albums. I'm thinking no. I'm thinking about the albums and the fact that I own. You know, there was some Led Zeppelin with a little turnstile thing in it, and of course
sure.
the wonderful Rolling Stones. There were a couple different pretty famous album art
sure.
work on those. So no, I owned a few of them. I'm
okay.
If I'm dating you, I'm dating me as well.
Well, I think, yeah, when I'm thinking in terms of CDs, I'm thinking, you know, as the modern medium, I'm dating myself because I forget about downloading songs, which I really don't do.
Right.
I haven't had occasion to do that.
Yeah.
Well, because the format here is so free-flowing, let me just say a couple things. There was a fella hired after World War II as the soldiers were returning, and hired by I think, a publishing conglomerate, and his job was to increase book sales. And the way that he did that was he went to prominent architects and had them or convinced them to design homes with bookshelves. He said that these guys have been abroad. They have culturally expanded their horizons. They're going to be coming home, and they're going to want to read books, and so you need to build homes with bookshelves. Well, the truth was he didn't care whether they ever read them or not, but they did buy homes, and they had bookshelves, and they bought books to put on the shelves. So I thought that was an interesting approach to sales, I guess.
Yes,
but,
yes.
And maybe I'm too cynical. Maybe they actually bought the books to fill the shelves and then read the books, which would be a terrific thing.
Or at least their guests did.
Sure. Well, and as you said, I think it says something about us, what books we have. I think an icebreaker, particularly maybe with younger people, is so often, what are you listening to? And maybe it's a generational thing that we would say, well, have you read a good book lately? So that tells a little bit about our interests.
Right, right. Sure. Well, I think that that's still the I'm guessing that that's still a way that young people can connect in terms of, you know, you look at some of the incredible interest and sales in recent books for teens. It's it certainly is not something that's going away anytime soon in terms of interest in the written word. Hopefully never going away. I don't think it will.
Let's hope not. I just think there is nothing more magical, honestly, than the written word. And I wrote an essay once for a paper that talked about various art forms, whether they were painting or sculpture or music. And I think that, or here's my pitch anyway, that the artist, in this case the author, has to be the most skilled of any group. And, of course, that's arbitrary. Not that I actually believe that. But if you think about how they're trying to convey emotion, these are black marks on white paper that have absolutely no meaning intrinsic in themselves unless the recipient can read. And over some period of time, it could be a week, it could be 100 years, the author puts these black marks down. And at some future time, a reader reads them and has, let's hope, an emotional reaction. But if you were a sculptor and sculpted a Madonna and child, you could show that to an Aborigine or a Swede or anybody, and they would know what it is and have some reaction. Or you could play a piece of music that might feel happy or sad. You don't have to be in that culture to get some reaction. But I think with words, everything is in the reader's mind, and I think it, you have to be pretty skillful to elicit the emotion in somebody's mind just based on these black marks. So that's my pitch for authors.
Yes, interesting and great. And here's my pitch for you, Stephen, is I had, after hearing your author talk here at Linfield College, the Linfield College Nicholson Library, I most definitely thought, okay, I'm going to read that book, and I got it out. But of course, as a librarian, I have a stack of about 20 books that I want to read, and so I didn't quite get around to yours yet. And I had to return it because somebody else had it on hold. So not a great advertisement for the library, but a very good advertisement for your book. I thought, okay, well, I'll have to just, you know, I'll get back on the list. And that's a sign of a good sign of popularity here at the library anyway, is that you've got to get on the list to get the book.
Well,
so congratulations to you for that.
Thank you. I think I mentioned this maybe on the radio, at least at some talk. My research is that there's something like 62,000 novels a year written. And so and I may have that wrong. That may be books in general, but I think it's novels. In any case,
written or published?
Published, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm sure many more are written.
Yes.
And so process for me, you know, you have to ask yourself, do we really need one more novel? And I'm so pleased that I did this and so happy with the result, not only the book itself and the story and the nice things that people have said, but it's been such a growth experience for me. And one of the things that really came home is that there's a really broad spectrum of stuff out there, genres. And if somebody is a Tom Clancy fan, they very likely will not care for what I've written. But that's okay. It doesn't mean either is better or worse. It's just really a matter of taste. And that's something that I've come to accept is that once you have the, I guess, technical skills to do something cohesive and make sense, really beyond that, it's like looking at a painting and is it abstract or realistic? You may have a preference, but it doesn't mean either one is better or worse than the other one.
Lucky for us that we have those choices.
Absolutely.
As the reader or the viewer.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about you've got 20 books lined up. Do you have an area that you concentrate on, or you're just kind of an omnivore?
I would say I'm an omnivore to some extent. I used to be purely a fiction, interested in fiction, but nonfiction is now something that is of great interest to me, although it's more a history or nonfiction that's written in a story form is I find interesting. I read I read some teen books. I read graphic novels as well.
Sure.
Although one of the things that I people sometimes have a romantic view or romanticized idea of what a librarian does, and unfortunately it does not involve reading all day as a lot of people think. And so I have only as much time as the average person to read, and which is unfortunate because I certainly see a lot of books that cross my path that are of great interest, and I wish that I had the time. And sometimes I wander around my workplace and just think, oh, I'd just like to sit down in one of these couches and read for the rest of the day, like I think most of the patrons would like to do as well. But unfortunately, that doesn't occur very often.
I'd like to come back to that, to your job, but first I just want to say, you said that you read young adult, or that's in the mix, and something that I've noticed, and maybe you can comment on this trend, it seems to me that authors who are known for sometimes hard-hitting adult novels have branched out, and not that they've stopped doing the one, but that they've added to their repertoire young adult. And I think, am I right, Robert Parker was one. Certainly Elizabeth George has ventured into that. I don't know if this is all a sort of a reaction to Harry Potter, or I don't know, but it seems to me that they're doing that.
It certainly is it's been a growing market for quite a while, and I think it just is even more so. And I remember when I was in library school talking about the fact that I think back in the 60s, maybe even the 70s and prior to that, there really wasn't a market for teen books. There weren't any teen books, whether there was a market for it or not. There really weren't any written. It was for kids or adults. And I would say that marketing in general sort of realized, oh, wait a minute, there's this group of consumers that consume a lot, and we should, get on that. That is kind of a cynical viewpoint of it, and on the other side of it, I think, is that there's
That doesn't make it wrong.
But there's also some really interesting, fun, enjoyable stories out there written for teens, and I regularly run into adults who are also reading those books. And I think part of it, with our very busy and distracted lives that we lead, It's hard for a lot of people to really delve into a intense book, and these books written for teens are a little easier to take in, easier to manage. And I think, I mean, that's certainly one of the things that appeals to me about them is that they're, I don't know if this is a blasphemous thing to say from or to hear from a librarian, but it's a fairly easy way to read, and that appeals to me given my busy life otherwise.
Well, I completely agree, and again, I've been sort of casually analyzing my book, my reading habits, and trying to extrapolate that. Why do people read? And I think there's different reasons that people read. One really is for diversion and relaxation. And there are authors who, the way they write, which is wonderful, but it's such a commitment. The books are so ponderous and complex that's not really maybe the way to unwind before you nod off for the night. And I think, and again, I hope anybody that hears this would take this exactly as I mean it. If you look at somebody like Sue Grafton, I think her books, obviously she's so successful, I think really, really complicated. There's a person who you learn to know and understand and enjoy, and it's kind of this literary friend. But for me anyway, it's not like trying to track the manufacturing of a nuclear weapon. It's just an enjoyable read. So
yes,
that I guess, yeah, that's one example maybe.
They have their place for certain.
Sure. Elmore Leonard, I think, is another. Do you know the TV show Justified? Have you ever watched that?
I know of it. I haven't seen it before.
Yeah. So he's the executive producer. In fact, I think Elmore Leonard's passed away, hasn't he, recently? But in any case, the show has his fingerprints all over it. Mm. And the action is nonstop. I think implausible often. And you know what? I don't care. Because it's just so fun. I feel like I can see the writer working behind the scenes, and I can see two fellows pointing or looking at each other and thinking, the action, gosh, has sort of stalled here. What should we do? Well, let's shoot somebody. And that's kind of propels this, and they take off again. And I hope that the world isn't quite as violent as portrayed in this show. But like I say, it is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yes, I've heard good things.
Yeah. So back to your job. What do you think? Yeah, I think you sort of touched on a misconception. But what do you think is the biggest misconception about what you do?
Oh, that it has to do with books.
Okay.
And it does, certainly. I mean, I'm surrounded by books, but my job is about people, and it's about people, and it's about technology. But certainly, the library is a place of service, and
mm-hmm.
a major part of what we do is to serve the public, and we do that in a number of different ways. One of them is by circulating books, but it's also by training and technology and making sure that people have access to information and ideas. One of the things that I was quite surprised about when I became a librarian is the dedication to not having censorship, the dedication to freedom of access to information. That's a huge piece of the ethics of librarianship, and something that we really work to espouse here at
mm-hmm.
the library.
So, do you feel pressures then from community members, or where does that come from? In other words, if somebody says, gee, I don't think this should be on your shelves. There's too much fill in the blank.
Happens on occasion. Thankfully, we have a fairly we have a supportive community. We have a supportive city council, but certainly there are times when people think yes, that a book or a movie should not be on the shelves. And I can we have a process to go through in terms of they fill out a form and then we sort of take a look at that. We can look at other libraries in the area and the reason for the item to be on the shelves and and answer accordingly. But basically, you know, you have to think about the public library is serving the entire community, and the entire community is quite varied in what they find to be appropriate and not appropriate. Different people have...
Right.
You know, obviously different viewpoints about that. And oftentimes it's, well, I shouldn't say oftentimes it's parents with kids' books. It's that's not the case at all. The idea is that parents, it's their right and responsibility to be in charge of what their child is viewing and reading. And then
sure.
in terms of adults, it's if it's offensive to you, then you know, you can return it and not check it out. And
sure.
but don't make it so that others can't read or view that piece of information, because that certainly is a slippery slope once you go, you know, once you
Absolutely.
Start going down there.
Sure.
The one of the phrases in libraries, public libraries, is that the library director or the collection development, the people that buy the books, they're not doing their job if they're not offending someone. Meaning
there you
that
go.
We,
I like
we
that.
Need to we need to make sure that we're having a wide variety of information presented to the public so that everyone finds something that they can relate to, but then probably they're also going to find some ideas that are you know, not to their liking.
Sure. I remember hearing a story, and I think this is true, and I think it's fairly recent, that there was a library in California, and maybe, you know, the whole system or whatever, but in the schools at least, were offering the kids a sanitized version of Huckleberry Finn.
Right.
And I thought, oh, my God, what a travesty. It would be hard to enumerate the ways that that's wrong. But and I don't know what the outcome was, but that I think maybe that's an extreme example of what you're talking about.
That certainly made the news, and it is a form of censorship. It is a form of rewriting history, and that's the piece
that's
the piece that's a little bit disturbing. You know, oh, let's clean this up so we don't, in some ways, so we don't look so bad, and that's, you know, I think we need to be able to look at history in a an accurate, honest way so that hopefully it doesn't get repeated.
Sure. I'm reading a book now about the Holocaust, and this is a memoir from a survivor. And I have actually been to Dachau in Germany and had some sense of this, and I suppose, like everybody, has some idea. But I started the book and then I had to put it down. It was so disturbing. And
right.
Then at my friend's urging, I picked it back up and finished it. But I think I hadn't really thought in terms of making us look better. I think that was really a great observation on your part. My assumption was that parents were trying to shield their kids, but the way that you posed it, it's shield them from the truth. It's to shield them from what really happened. And I don't think anybody benefits from that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jenny, I'm going to wrap up, but I have one last question for you, and I've always wondered about this. I read an article one time where librarians were talking about things that they found in returned books that I suspect were used for book markers. Have you ever found anything particularly odd?
Not particularly odd. I did find a tuition check for a private school that was in the thousands of dollars in a book that was returned. Thankfully, I was able to call the person, and they were very grateful for that information.
I can imagine.
We did definitely have a large collection of bookmarks from things that were left in books, and every once in a while we'll do a display where we put them all up, and then people can take them if they recognize them as their own.
Right.
So that's been a fun one to do. Since I'm not the person handling the books when they come in, I'm not necessarily the best person to ask about that, but I do remember that one book that I put on the shelf and found that check in.
Yeah. Well, Jenny, thank you so much. I'll stop by when I get back home. But it's been great talking to you. I really appreciate it.
Very good to talk with you too, Steve. And best wishes to you and your brother and the rest of your family.
Thanks so much. And Merry Christmas.
You too.
Okay.
Bye, Steve. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Folks, that was Jenny Berg. Jenny is the director of the McMinnville Library. And my hope is that this broadcast goes really around the world, and so you wouldn't have access maybe to McMinnville. But the library is just a treasure, the library system, the idea of a library. And I encourage you to use that in all its capacity. And again, I'm Stephen Long. Love to hear from you at stephenwlong.com, or you can leave a message on the Facebook page, There's a Somebody. Be well, everyone. Happy holidays.